Tired of complex and high credit card processing fees? It's time to simplify. Whether you own a big business or a small startup, Empower Payments can save you money. Streamline your payment process while saving money today with Empower Payments. Learn more at empowerpayments.com. That's empowerpayments.com.
Yes, indeed. He's here. It's awesome. It's just awesome when everything comes together like a well-oiled machine. That's what's happening right now here in the program. I can only imagine what disaster awaits us. So far, perfect program. You know, nothing's gone wrong to this point. Doug Gottlieb, our college basketball insider, brought to you by Corona and Corona Light, is with us on our Sprint guest line. Doug, how are you?
I'm great. Sharon, how are you? Happy holidays, everybody.
And same to you as well. I hope you had a wonderful – well, I talked to you last week, so I've talked to you since.
Yeah, but, you know, like Christmas trees are up.
Yeah.
Hanukkah bushes are up. I just felt like wishing you a happy holidays.
Yes. Do you have both the Christmas tree and the Hanukkah bush up?
We have a Christmas tree. I mean, we don't call it a Hanukkah bush, right? We do the
– use your term. You're the one who called it a Hanukkah bush.
No, I know. I mean, I know there are people that are Jewish that do the Hanukkah bush so their kids don't feel like left out or whatever. I'm just saying we just call it a Christmas tree, you know?
Okay.
We do the elf on the shelf. We don't do the mensch on the bench. But I'm thinking about the mensch on the bench, but we're getting close to the end of the elf on the shelf era.
Boy.
Are you aware of the mensch on the bench?
No, that's a first for me. That's an absolute first.
It's a real thing.
Wow, that's spectacular. You know, I'm blown away, frankly. Good for you.
I know I'm on to talk about football. I mean basketball, but am I the only one who really liked watching last night? Like, again, I don't want to get hurt and I don't want to get laid out, and I hope Ryan Shazier is okay. But like, isn't that kind of what you watch football for?
That's what I said.
Like, teams don't like each other and they hit the hell out of each other?
Oh, I was kind of surprised that ESPN, if you stayed with it and followed into the postgame, I was like, is that the first football game they've ever seen? It seemed like it was certainly the first Steelers game they've seen, because that's what Steelers football looks like.
And that's definitely what Steelers Bengals look like.
Yes.
Right? Like, that's exactly – it was just a carryover the playoff game from 2 years ago. Like, I don't understand why they're being so self-righteous. And – like, look, Juju Smith-Schuster, right? He shouldn't have stood over Vontaze Burfict after he laid out Vontaze Burfict. I thought that was a borderline dirty hit, even though it might be legal. Just things you don't do. That said, like, dude, that's awesome. Somebody got Vontaze Burfict after Vontaze Burfict's been getting dudes for 10 years in the league? Like, all right. I can't wait to see the next time these two teams play.
Yeah. Are you... sidebar here. Are you surprised that the NFL hasn't come up with more severe penalties to stop the taunting? You know, like the standing over Burfict the way he did that. Like in basketball, they jump in there, right? You don't get away with that kind of stuff in basketball.
Yeah, look, I think, and they suspended Gronk yesterday, and I could be wrong. Like, obviously, Gronk, you can't react like that. And he was mad because he's being held. And, you know, he tries to, like, body slam a guy, and he ends up, you know, just – he ends up concussing him. The balancing out the penalties with the physicality of it and the fact that some of that is part of the sport is a really, really hard thing. It's a really hard thing. I mean, like, look, I don't like the fact that in basketball, in college basketball, some of these officials, you know, the second you – you know – guy dunks on another guy and he stares at him all the way down the court. Like, that's not taunting. I mean, I guess it is by literal definition, but that's kind of what the sport is about. Right now, you get the ball back and you get to come at me. So, I'm not even going like back in my day. I'm just like, part of that is the core of what basketball is, a city game. It's a street game. It's a machismo game. So is football. And so some of that you have to keep some of that in sports. And if you take all of it out, then, like, what are we left with?
Yeah, it's not a – there's not an easy answer to it. I agree. Where's the line? Where do you draw it? Because I think there's a section of the fan base, I think, that really enjoys that, you know, that likes the in-your-face part of it. And so you want a little bit, but you don't want too much. I mean, it's
– you don't want anybody to get hurt, and you don't want anybody to fight. Like, outside of that, And it's a hard one in football because a lot of these big hits, they can lead to injuries. And it's a hard one in both sports because there is a certain level of taunting to which it's going to lead to a fight, and that's what you don't want.
You know, I usually leave this question for the end, but I just got to ask, did you, like, pull out the fourth skillet out of a stack of, like, nine
No, right there? It's just a metal chair that I'm sitting on. I'm at the Fox lot,
okay,
which is still owned by 20th Century Fox,
okay,
by the way. And I'm looking out over downtown New York, where they film NYPD Blue. They're not filming anything currently.
Okay.
And there's just, they have these big, thick metal chairs. I'm not sure if they're worried about them, one, blowing away with Santa Ana winds, or if they're worried about somebody stealing them, or maybe both. But they're some of the heaviest metal chairs in the business, and I just had to move one.
Okay. Good to know. We're talking to Doug Gottlieb, our college basketball insider, about a whole variety of topics here today. Let's turn to basketball. And let's talk a little bit about LiAngelo Ball. I don't spend a lot of time talking about LeVar Ball, certainly not as much as a lot of the talking heads on TV like to do. But the kid's not that good. Like, is that what this is? Is just cover for the fact that he's really not that good and they're going to go hide him or something? Like, what do you make of this latest LeVar Ball situation?
I think it's the greatest, it's the best thing for UCLA basketball.
Sure.
I don't think that's even close, right? Now UCLA is out of the ball business. Though LaMelo is still technically committed there, everyone knows LaMelo will never play a game in college basketball. That's why he has his own signature shoe and he's signing autographs in China. It took him out of school. Like, that's never going to happen. And that's great. Like, Steve Alford got everything, all he really wanted out of the Ball family was Lonzo. And Lonzo reinvigorated his program, saved his job, got UCLA back up on its feet, and now he's gone. Great. And like, look, you know, the comical thing about LeVar saying he's going to train LiAngelo for the draft is not just that LiAngelo's never going to be drafted, but if you talk to Lakers people, and I talk to Lakers people, they're like, well, he doesn't know how to play pick and roll. He doesn't know how to play on-ball defense. He doesn't have a good set of finishing shots.
Are you talking about Lonzo? Yeah.
So Lonzo was, the dad did a good job in terms of, you know, keeping him away from, you know, Lonzo's a good kid, but in terms of being refined and ready to play in the NBA, like, he's basically never been coached before. So he actually does a terrible job, and now he's empowered by the fact that his son's in the NBA, and so he thinks what he does is actually the right thing. So, yeah, look, less LeVar Ball, the better. And I think the fact that LiAngelo and then LaMelo won't play college basketball, I don't think that's worse for the sport.
Let's talk a little bit about the Missouri Tigers getting a win against Central Florida. The storyline,
that's a good win, by the way.
It is a good win. And the storyline there was that they ended their 36 game road losing streak. But the story got better when UCF turns around and beats Alabama.
Yep.
Where are we at? Where's the, you know, Michael Porter Jr. thinks he might be able to come back at the end. We'll deal with that when that happens. But right now, where's your temperature on Missouri?
I mean, I'm pleasantly surprised. I mean, to turn this thing around that quickly, UCF is a good team. They are a tournament team. But more than anything, it is getting the proverbial monkey off of Mizzou's back. And I think we may have touched on this last week. It may have been when you were off. When you were off, that was right when the surgery came down. You know, I got enough people who, most of us former athletes, we either try and talk for a living, coach for a living, or sell pharmaceuticals, right? I have guys that do back stuff. They're like, he laid me out 3 to 4 months. Like, he only had 1 to 2 months. Like, he'll be okay. Like, are they just protecting him for the draft? So I couldn't really figure it out. And I do think that nobody wants to put pressure on him that he has to play. But, I mean, you have the possibility of Michael Porter Jr. come back and playing on an NCAA tournament team. I'm fascinated by it because Missouri is – I don't think they're in the haves category. You know, there's probably 10 teams or so that could make a deep run, and I would – maybe 12, to which Missouri's not. But in that next group, they've shown themselves to be right there this early in the season. And, again, it's one thing to show some success early in the season. It's a complete different thing to do it considering what the last 2 years have been. They have been just pitiful disasters, non-competitiveness, nobody caring. And the SEC is better. And I think, you know, I think my big concern would be that Missouri, by the time they got good, they'd be playing in conference play, and the SEC is pretty good, and it would beat them up. Now I think they're in the NCAA tournament, you know, barring a huge collapse during conference play. And you go in knowing that some of these wins you're going to get are going to be seen as quality wins, and losses won't be seen as bad losses. Florida's good. A&M's good. Kentucky's going to be good. You know, Arkansas, I know they lost to Houston, but they're not bad. They're pretty good. You look around the league, and it's a pretty damn good league, and they're helping, not hurting, the overall kind of credibility of the league.
They absolutely are.
Like most pleasant surprise maybe in college basketball. I think that would be a fair statement in terms of the ability to turn it around that quickly and to do so without Michael Porter Jr. That is a pleasant, pleasant surprise.
It is, and we know that what Konzo Martin preaches is toughness and defense, that's what they want to be. We've talked about the fact that their question mark is going to be the point guard position and solving that. Did they get any closer, though, when Geist plays 9, Van Leer plays 9, Phillips plays 20, Harris plays 11? Are they any closer to solving that? Like, good win, no doubt about it, but is it like, okay, the big hurdle that they got to get over is still sitting there?
No question. And you're going to play in your league. There are some teams that pressure, and you're going to be on the road. So no, I don't think they've solved that. And I also think that part of the construct of this team is because Michael Porter Jr. is such a good passer and ball handler, whatever position he plays, you feel like you could get away with it. And at some point that will rear its ugly head. At some point that will be problematic. But in the short term, like celebrate the successes, which just hadn't been felt. And, like, look, you and I, we talk about Missouri basketball and SEC and them joining the SEC, and I'm sure people think, well, you don't like them. Like, no, I'm just kind of a realist about it. I understand there's a huge, vibrant fan base for Mizzou basketball. It's just been bad. It's really hard to like anything that's been going on recently. And so instead of pointing out, as you actually, like, still kind of haven't figured out the point guard spot and they're getting away with it now, yeah, that's going to be an issue. In the meantime, hey, Central Florida's a good win. They've been playing good. The team overall has been playing good and better basketball here in November. If this team has it, we'll figure it out.
Texas A&M looks really good. Mississippi State's got good. Penn Howland as their coach, so you tend to want to believe that it, you know, maybe they're, you know, 7-0. It can be real. We know what Kentucky's going to get better as the year goes along, but Florida got slapped by Florida State. Is it easy to just say that's a hangover from not getting it done against Duke, and so they really allowed Duke to beat them twice, and it's really not that big a deal, they'll wake up now and go? Or are they coming back, and where's your pulse overall in the SEC now that Missouri has to try to tackle?
And remember, Arkansas, who'd been playing so well, got smacked. We just mentioned that.
Yeah.
Houston. Manny's not very good this year. Auburn's kind of up and down. Auburn's got some talent, but, you know, they have the NCAA issues, and the play without two of their guys probably won't have them. But they do have, you know, at Purifoy, they have some talent. Look, I think the SEC is better than it's been in terms of the depth of quality teams. I think A&M's the best team. Let's see. I'm going to see them in person. They come out here and play USC on Friday at Staples. I'm going to go over and see. Oh, no, they already played USC. They play somebody else coming. They play somebody today. They play Arizona today, right? I think, or they play Arizona either today or they play on Friday. My days are all confused. I was just looking at those. Oh, Oklahoma plays at Staples. So they play Arizona in Phoenix. And Arizona's playing better after losing 3 in a row in the Bahamas, but they're still not necessarily good yet. I think A&M's the best team, but they got a lot of guys. They got some personalities. We'll see how that thing blends. I think, you know, Florida's probably team number 2, and then I think it's Kentucky in terms of their talent, but you know how young teams are. They'll lose to somebody they shouldn't. So kind of right there in that mix, you know, below A&M and probably below Florida, but in the competitive with Kentucky because of their own youth, and probably a notch below Kentucky most of the season, but not that far below. And if they got Porter Jr., you wouldn't feel terrible about putting above Kentucky. So because they have more shooting than Kentucky. But yeah, a 5-7 bid league. You know, you got Georgia out there, who's not bad. They won out here in Fullerton and Anaheim. They look good. So I think it's a really good league. I think, you know, you got five kind of locks and then three or four other in the potential. And right now I would put Missouri as a, you should feel good about your chances to make the NCAA tournament team.
Where should K-State be? You mentioned Vanderbilt, not that good. We're talking to Doug Gottlieb, our College Hoops Insider. They get a nice win, 84-79 against Vanderbilt. A nice win, or I don't know what it is. I mean, early on, it's like, wow, they're hammering a bad Vanderbilt team. This is what you're supposed to do. Let's get really excited. Then they absolutely let Vanderbilt right back into the game. But they get the win, and we talk about kind of the point guard position. They get the win, but again, Dean Wade no-shows against higher-level opponents. Like, he kicks the crap out of the nobodies, and he can't get anything done against the big boys. Now, Xavier Sneed stepped in, and that's the other guy that you feel like could take a big step this year, freshman to sophomore year, and the talent. So that is the silver lining. Where do we sit on our pulse check on the Cats?
I think I like him more than you do. I'm with you on Dean Wade, but in years past, especially last year, when Dean Wade didn't play well, they didn't play well, right? Like, the court shrunk, and all of a sudden it was too difficult to score, and you're trying to get blood out of a rock, and whatever. I think whereas now, you know, his confidence goes up and down, and I think sometimes, you know, he's a little bit athletically overwhelmed. But, I mean, they have one loss to a really good team, 2-point loss. Outside of that, they've dominated the non-conference, and they look good, and they're good from the perimeter. So, I again, you know, just like I said, Missouri's kind of the, you know, the most pleasant surprise maybe in the country. I'd say K-State's probably that team in terms of pleasant surprise and performing better than I would have thought at this point in the year, or many would have thought in the Big 12. So, I like Xavier Sneed last year. I was surprised at how, you know, their backcourt struggled shooting the ball the first couple games, but they seem to have progressed to the mean, if you will, instead of regressed to the mean. And, you know, you got some backcourt pop. If you can get Dean Wade playing outside maybe of, you know, the KUs of this world, and I'm not sure how they'll be interested to see how they match up with West Virginia with how West Virginia's playing, and West Virginia will be full strength here at semester. I think they're right in there in the mix in the Big 12 in the kind of upper half. Again, feeling like an NCAA tournament, and you go into the Big 12 where I'm not sure there's a bad – you'll take a bad loss, right? Like Oklahoma State will probably lose to Wichita and lose to Florida State, but then be undefeated in their non-conference, so their RPI won't be bad. Iowa State had, you know, one early – you know, where they lost to Missouri early. That doesn't look like a bad loss now, playing better. So now K-State, you've survived ability to have a bad loss, and so you're going to put yourself right there back in the mix of where they always are.
I don't know that you – I mean, maybe you do like them more than me. You probably do. You probably do like them more than me. Yes, I will actually agree with that statement. However, maybe the reason why – and I looked at this real quick while you were talking. December 4th of 2015, the K-State Wildcats were sitting at 5-1 with a loss only at Sprint Center to North Carolina. It was a 10-point game, but they actually had the lead with like 3 to go in that game, and they would go on to beat Georgia that night and improve to 6-1, a true road game at Georgia, and improve to 6-1, and people were starting to get pretty excited about that K-State team, yet they would go on to go 5-13 in the league. This
team was the Marcus Foster year, though, right?
That was the year after Foster, I believe. I can look at a box score on one of these. Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure it's the year after Foster. I'll look at a box score of that Carolina game, see if he was in it. No, he wasn't on the team.
But why is this different?
Yeah. I mean, you seem pretty bullish.
Honestly, I think college basketball is different. I think the league's different.
Okay.
I don't think the league's as good. You know, I mean, listen, you go back the last 2 years, the league's been really good at the top. You got pros and fourth-year guys and whatever. And, look, Texas has a lot of talent, but they've got a lot of young guys. And they're still they're going to lose games they shouldn't. A&M has a lot of old guys. Tech has a lot of old, you know, like grown men. But there's going to be times in which they struggle to score. I just think the league isn't as good. And it's not going to expose a lack of talent. And I also think Xavier Sneed is you know, I watched him last year. I was like, wow, this is a really talented kid considering, you know, Bruce doesn't get a lot of credit in terms of his ability to recruit high-level kids. I think college basketball has become a lot more about program players, second, third, fourth year in the system sort of guys. And that's what K-State has a lot of. And I think that's how you kind of survive and build a program. I think those type of programs have a lot more sustainability than some of the flashier ones. Like I think it's kind of changed. And I also think the Big 12 has lost a lot of talent the last 2 years. It's still a very competitive league, but at the top, it's not as dominant. It's not as talented. They just lay out, hey, they got better players than you, and run into that.
Nothing to talk about with Kansas. They didn't play a game over the weekend, so we won't even mention them. Great stuff, Doug. Yes, we will talk about Kansas. 76-60. They slap around Syracuse. We talked about it. This isn't a vintage Syracuse edition at all. But they do still play a zone. They know how to play the zone, and you're going to see some zones thrown at you here and there, even if it's just a junk defense, with coming out of a timeout with 10 seconds on the shot clock to give you a different look, and you're going to have to be able to attack it. Devontae Graham's not going to rain 29-footers on a regular basis. I mean, he extended his range and was killing it, but he has that ability.
It really is crazy where, like, I hate to do the kids these days, where the kids these days shoot from. Like, we used to do that in high school. Like, you could pull up from the volleyball line in high school and get away with it. But, like, nobody did it in college. And now these guys just have such confidence. Yeah. And, obviously he's going, and he was feeling it. But, damn, I mean, you got some, like, oh, my God, I can't believe he's taking that shot. But they're like, yeah. I mean, that was impressive.
I think the most impressive part for me, that was impressive. And that just happens. Like, he's a talented kid, and he got hot. What's impressive to me is they were 16 of 24 inside the arc. And it's not like it was just, well, you know, there's that classic Kansas team that just owns the boards with their two bigs, their two NBA bigs, and they just got all these offensive boards and put them back. They got beat on the glass by Syracuse, which is, I don't know how that happened, but it did.
Well, they're playing four guards.
Well, I know, and that's my point. They're playing four guards, and they were 16 of 24 inside the arc. I mean, that's where they really won. Everyone came away from that game talking about the threes that were raining down. Well, they were only raining down from Devontae Graham. Svi hit several, too. But what was where they killed Syracuse was 16 of 24 inside the paint. That's not supposed to happen.
Sure.
And so.
Well, no, but look, if you're. I mean, that's how you beat a zilly. And it's actually how you beat man to man now, you know? Like
it's definitely how you beat a zone, but it do it. You have to go execute. I see teams crap that away all the time against the zone. They've been taught, they've gone through at least a crash course going into it, if not spent a couple of days on it. They don't always execute it like that. I mean, that was, to me, and then they're a veteran team. Am I stunned that they can execute? No, they've got a lot of veteran guards. They're an older team, all those things. But they did it, and that needs to be commended for Bill Self's team, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He who makes the most layups wins, more so than he who makes the most three-point shots, right? That's basketball in 2017, and they also got.
I believe that comes with the mensch on the bench, doesn't it?
Probably does.
Yeah,
it's true. It's that we fall so in love with the 3-point shot, and we're prone to look at the, you know, when we look at the box score now, we look at a 3-point shot, we look at plus minus, right? But it's not just about getting twos; it's about getting really makeable twos. And converting those twos. I mean, like, look, I coach, my son's eight. I started coaching his 10U team, whatever. And last night, like, everything we do, we're working on, like, layups. And they're like, why aren't we working on 3-point shots? Like, because you can't make them. Let's worry about the things you can make. And they're like, what makes the Warriors so good is just that. They're not just a great 3-point shooting team. They're a great 2-point shooter. They take makeable twos, right? They get right to the rim. And they don't take, you know, mid-range fadeaways. Like, that is over. I think here's the thing about playing small. And, you know, I actually think, you know, depending upon lineups, there's room for with certain teams. Not really with this Kansas team. There's certain rooms with certain teams to play really small. I talked to Mike Boynton about it because, you know, his big guys at Oklahoma State aren't very good. And I said, you know, you ever thought about playing super small, you know, playing your – playing one of your small forwards at five, you know, playing them two at your, yeah, but we get killed on the boards. Like, okay. But think about the, you know what your weaknesses are, right? Your weaknesses are rebounding and your weakness is potentially post defense. Like, okay. But, you know, like can you lose games in college basketball on the boards? You can't. But you can also lose them in turnovers. And when you play five guards, you can turn the ball over a lot less. You win on three-point shots. You know, you're going to have, even if you don't have one pure three-point shooter, you're always going to get a five out. And, oh, yeah, by the way, though you're not going to get post-up twos, you're going to get driving, cutting twos because you're concerned about three-point shots. You got drivers at every position. And more than anything, you know where your weaknesses are. And, for example, Syracuse is the perfect example. Right? Like, the strength of their team isn't really scoring at the block. The strength of very few teams is scoring at the block. What happens is, when you see Svi Mihailuk guarding your power forward, you're like, oh, we got to go inside. And you stop executing
right.
your regular offense.
Yes.
You change your identity. And so, yeah, it's playing to the weakness of the defense, but it's not playing to your strength. So I think that one of the things that Bill has found is, are the weaknesses? Absolutely. Absolutely. It's hard. When you get out-rebounded by Syracuse, like as you pointed out, anybody's fault at Syracuse. That no, on the other hand, you're putting four shooters out there, which spreads out that zone, less turnovers, and though you're not going to get post-up twos or offensive rebound twos, you get cutting slashing twos, which you wouldn't get.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely, and Kansas is going to be an outstanding team throughout the course of the year. And
The one other part is, you know, the high post area obviously is a weakness to the zone. Like, it's as cliche as, you know, as any in basketball. But so oftentimes, every zone offense has like a four or a five, like a power handling the ball there. So the first thing is, they're usually your worst pass, right? And that's not, yes, they may be able to shoot a free throw jump shot, but when you catch the ball in the high post, usually you're catching it flashing up from the weak side low
right.
post. Right? That's a hard shot. That's not a good shot. So it becomes really a passing position. High post in college basketball against the zone is a passing position, and you have your worst passer there. So so a lot of times coaches like to roll in a guard into there. And what Kansas is allowed to do is, you know, they keep that thing open. It allows for penetration. Now you have passers making passes to your best shooters. It's philosophy against the same defense than the traditional put your one big guy high, one big guy low, and look inside and then feed the weak side against the zone.
Yeah, and then they have the ability to have several guys come up there too. A lot
Correct.
Of teams, you know, watching these play all the time, I see them. It's always one guy. One guy really runs several guys through there that can be effective up there. No, I agree, and I think that's going to make them tough to defend in the NCAA tournament. We're talking to Doug Gottlieb. He's our college basketball insider. Joins us here on our Sprint Guest Line. Time now 4 brought to you by the Kansas Lottery. A lottery prize pack from us here at 810. Enter your non-winning holiday scratch tickets in the Play On loyalty program there with Kansas Lottery. Can win up to 15 grand in the second chance drawing coming up here in January 19th, to be specific. Doug, I'll start you with this. Okay.
No.
Interesting little
discussion. I was never hurt. I'm sure people, when I got fouled late in games, would tell me, I'm hurt. You're hurt. But no, I never got hurt.
No. Okay.
But I also think that, like, the freak out over concussion basketball, and there are some guys who've got repeat concussions, but like it's football, right? Like football, you can get a concussion on any play. The likelihood of a, you know, like when you're worried about a kid getting hit in the nugget, like it's just different in basketball than football. Like there's not, tell me the former basketball player who's walking around with traumatic brain injury because of playing hoop. Like it just doesn't exist. So we do cut out because of what's going on in football more so than
play football ever.
I did from age 7, played tackle football till 14.
Okay, interesting.
Powers, my first coach. Well, played on the Raiders, but I was on the Packers the second year. He was back. We'd have donuts for the game, and I distinctly remember him every tackle somebody. See what you hit. You know.
Yeah, it was good advice.
So,
it was good advice.
Ryan Chazier should have taken it.
Yes.
Scary last night.
Absolutely.
Scary stuff.
Chiefs record will be what? Just curious for an outsider's impression of the Chiefs. 6-6.
I can't beat the Jets. I don't know, man. My Chargers, how about that? But Chiefs passing in the night. Whew. I think they will end up, man, just got to get a dub. I think they'll end up 8-8.
8-8, all right. And will LaMelo Ball be drafted?
Yes, he will be drafted.
See, I actually think there's a decent chance. Like, the media can't be in the waiting area because they're so already so sick of LaVar Ball babbling around there. throw in, you know, LaMelo's not going to play college ball, like you
said. He doesn't play any defense. He hasn't developed his body.
Right. And he's the smallest one of the bunch.
I do think, you know, if he's a 6'7" point guard who plays some professional basketball, remember, he'll have to play a year of some sort of professional basketball.
LaMelo's only 6'2".
No, I'm saying if by then, and I think he's bigger than 6'2" now.
Oh, I don't know. Okay. Maybe he is.
If he ends up bigger, I mean, look, he'll have to play some year of professional basketball, D-League or otherwise. You know, you can play right in the D-League right away. I don't think that's what they do. I think he goes in. If he was smart, he would send him to Australia and have him play with, you know, AIS, the Australian Institute of Sport, somebody who's really going to coach him, and I think the kid would have a chance. You didn't say first round. You didn't say lottery. You just said draft.
Right.
And I do think there's the possibility that he gets drafted. And there's a possibility that somebody drafts him just to curry favor if the brother ends up, if Zoe ends up working out and becoming good enough to where you'd want to have him sign him as a free agent. Like, that does happen as favors. But, yes, it could all completely backfire, and he could have just one NBA player of the three. Jello was never going to be a player. He could play a football player. He has a football player's body, but not a basketball player.
Yeah, I guarantee.
Jello's the middle one who just left UCLA.
Right, I guarantee LaMelo doesn't go in the first round. I guarantee that. I'd take any comer on that.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking first round. I was thinking a flyer in the second round.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that logic. Doug, great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
Hey, I just want to point out that Southern California's had two NFL teams for 5 minutes, and they're both in first place. Just want to point that one out.
Yeah, it is. It's sad, is what it is for us. Trust me. Yeah. Have your victory dance. Stand over us and glare, because it sucks. Yes. Enjoy, Doug.
Later.